Well, good afternoon, and I'm Gary Holt. Welcome to Equestrian Legacy Radio. EL Radio is a program designed for all equestrians and for people who love the equestrian lifestyle. We'll have programs that will discuss every discipline and feature guests that will share information and stories and be here to answer your questions. I've never met a breed of horse that I didn't like, but for the last 50 years, my breed of choice, my love and my passion has been the Tennessee Walking Horse. And so these programs will be devoted to the Tennessee Walking Horse and all of their disciplines, from the show ring to the trail to extreme cowboy and other areas that the walking horse excels in. So whether your breed of choice is the Tennessee Walking Horse or if it's another breed, I hope you'll find our shows informative and entertaining. And we'll just have a conversation on EL Radio. And we invite you to join the conversation. You'll be able to call in and ask questions and engage in the conversation. But having said that, this is our first show. And because I'm technically challenged, this is the only show that we'll have where we'll not be accepting phone calls. So I apologize for that, but I just felt that for our first show and with the technology that I don't possess, we would be better off not to do that. So if you'd like to contact us, you have comments that you'd like to make about this show, you can do that on our website, and that's www.equestrianlegacy.net. So we look forward to hearing from you. I'm extremely pleased to have today as our first guest Mr. Tracy Boyd, who is the president of the Tennessee Walking Horse Breeders and Exhibitors Association, and Mr. Ron Thomas, who is the executive director of TWEBA. And just as a brief introduction, because I know that we have listeners that are global today, Tracy has been a lifelong Tennessee walking horse enthusiast. His father was a walking horse trainer, Mr. Billy Boyd. Tracy has been involved in training horses. He has his judge's license. He spent 7 years with the Breeders Association as the executive assistant. He was a breeding manager for one of the premier breeding farms in Middle Tennessee, Rising Star Ranch, and he currently is serving his first term as president of the association. So, Tracy, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, Gary. Glad to be here.
And Ron Thomas is no stranger to the walking horse industry. Ron, I have known since the mid-80s. He was the CEO of the Tennessee Walking Horse National Celebration, and I think was one of the most instrumental men in developing that great facility and providing us with great shows and entertainment for the years that he was there. And then the Breeders Association was fortunate to have Ron take the position of executive director, I believe, a year or 2 years ago, Ron. And so
yes.
We're pleased to have Ron with us today and to join us in our conversation. I'd like to start the program today addressing some questions and some misconceptions that people have and uncertainties as to exactly what the Tennessee Walking Horse Breeders Exhibitors Association's role is in the walking horse industry. And what does the association do? And why should we be a member of the association? So I'll just let either one of you address that first question.
Thank you, Gary. As many of your listeners, our listeners know today, this Tennessee Walking Horse Breeders Association was formed in 1935 as a registry to record the pedigrees of the Tennessee Walking Horse, which had become a prominent breed in and around Middle Tennessee for the farmers and the plantation owners of that day. And it was established originally as a registry. And then there was more interest for showing the horse. And then, of course, the showing began in the 1939, the Tennessee Walking Horse National Celebration came around. But basically what the Breeders Association is a breed registry. We record purebred Tennessee Walking Horses. We parentage verify them. And that is our primary role. Another role that is important for the TWHBA is a marketing arm of the industry, and that's part of our charge. As our funds allow us to do it, we promote this horse as much as we can. We promote it worldwide as we can.
Okay, why should I be a member of the association, Tracy?
Well,
if I'm not a breeder, why should I be a part of the association?
Well, if you're a walking horse enthusiast of any kind, we have a multitude of programs available to people no matter what their interest level is. If they're interested in trail riding, if they're interested in showing, if they're interested in endurance riding, we have a multitude of youth programs and versatility things. There's more reason to be a member of the association than just for the show ring or for registering horses.
Okay. A lot of folks have asked the question, I know, that why is the association not more involved in controlling horse shows and addressing some of the situations that we have with the soaring problem that exists, and why are they not more actively involved in that?
Gary, I'll be glad to attempt that one. The breed registry, as Tracy has described, is simply that, the breed registry, where we record pedigrees and maintain proper ownership of horses. In other breeds, specifically American Quarter Horse Association, the Arabian Horse Club of America, the Pintos, other national breeds, they have one big office and one phone number. And if you call there and have a question about training, they direct you to the training. If it's about ownership, if it's about shows, if it's about welfare, they all are contained in that one building. Our industry never got off to that start. Tracy mentioned the breed registry started in 1935, and then in 1939, a group of Shelbyville, Bedford County businessmen said, we need a championship show for these little plantation horses that are becoming popular in Middle Tennessee and the little county fairs. And they started the celebration, something that was successful from the very beginning. Then years later, the trainers decided they needed an association, as did the owners in subsequent years. So we've ended up, just by the way it happened, with four different distinct groups. And although in some cases that's not good, in our case that's just the way it is, and we are stuck with where we are. The breed registry today, we have no authority at any horse show. We do not train or select judges. We have nothing to do with the inspection process. That is not a cop-out or passing the buck. That's just the way it is. During the recent terrible times over a video that was made public, many, many people have called and written and asked, why don't you do something to eliminate this? Why don't you do something to help this? Why don't you stop this? And those are areas in which we just have no control. Throughout history, there have been times that the breed registry was involved in the, what was at that time called the National Horse Show Commission, made up of representatives of the Owners Association, the trainers, and the breed registry. And they had equal votes and so forth regarding judging and rules. But later that changed, and the breed registry is no longer involved in that. So in that regard, again, it sounds like I'm passing the buck, and I absolutely am not. I'm merely saying we have no authority to go in anyone's barn and do any kind of investigation. We have no authority at the show ring as to what the rules are, attire, and so forth. And we don't have any authority whatsoever in the inspection area regarding who shows and who does not.
Well, that explains that pretty well. I know one of the misconceptions that people have is that they're accustomed to associations like the American Quarter Horse Association and the Saddlebreds Associations and the Arabian Associations to be the authority and the rulemaker for their breeds. And so I think the average person probably looks at the Tennessee Walking Horse Breeders and Exhibitors Association to be that entity for the breed. But that's a good explanation as to why it's not. And perception is reality to a lot of people. And I know that over the last few years, the economy has been tough for everybody. The horse business is not what it's been, not only for the walking horse industry, but other breeds as well. But talk to me just a little bit about, either one of you can address this. I know that our registry or our membership in the association decreased from close to 20,000 members to where we're just under 10,000 today. And how has that affected the association and its ability to meet the needs of the members? And what is the financial status of the association? I know some people have said, will the association last or will it become privatized? So could you talk to us about that just a little bit?
Okay, thank you. In our industry, the trainers have several hundred members. Walking Horse Owners Association have about 2,000 members, and we have about 8,300 today. The Celebration is not a membership-driven organization. It's just a horse show, a big horse show, but it is a horse show in its purest form. So we are by far the largest membership-driven group in our industry. When membership drops, certainly that affects your revenue. That affects the things you can do over and above just registering horses. That affects your marketing efforts, your promotion efforts, and so forth. And in the recent recession, all equine breeds were just absolutely hit hard by loss of members and loss of activity and loss of interest in their breed. Just returned from a National Pedigreed Livestock Convention, and in a sidebar conversation with the executive director of the Arabian horse industry, he said that their membership was a little over 56,000 when the recession came, and now it's 28,000. So no one is really immune from tough times. And when things do get tough, the hobbies are the first to go. Second homes, boats, 30-day cruises and so forth are put on the back burner while people take care of their more pressing needs. And we are no different in that regard. But the loss of membership, certainly that hurts the efforts that we try to do to maintain a registry that serves its members and serves it properly. And you ask about our current financial situation, and I'm happy to deal with that. I'm delighted to say that we are paying our bills. We are current on everything we ought to be doing. We have a reserve investment account that's there for a true rainy day fund when there's just something that's very, very important that we use it for. Other than that, it is restricted cash to us on a daily basis. Our staff, about 5 years ago, there were 30 people in the building we occupy now. Today, there are 8. A huge difference. And continuing along that line, we needed to shave some more off expenses, and rather than terminate one or two people, we put our entire staff to a 4-day work week about a month ago, and each staff member had to accept and undergo a very painful 20% reduction in pay. We did not like doing that, but it was something we needed to do to keep our expenses in line with the falling revenue. As your revenue declines, about the only thing you can do to stay above water is reduce expenses. And you finally reach a point, of course, you just can't reduce anymore. We are not there yet. But we are continuing to look at all of our services, and the different things we offer our members to see what is critical to our success and to their enjoyment and what isn't. Now, may I give you an example, Gary?
All right.
We have a beautiful building in Lewisburg, Tennessee, that we moved into in the mid-60s. The building is paid for. There's no lien on it whatsoever. But it costs us about $150,000 a year for it just to be here. It's 17,300 square feet. 8 employees need about 2,500 square feet. So we are underutilizing our asset by a tremendous amount when we are using such a small part of a building that was designed for 25 or 30 employees. Should we sell it? Should we lease it? Should we stay and hope things get better? Those are things that our executive committee must study, and in a few moments I'm sure we'll talk about the makeup of our board and our executive committee, and that will become a little clearer to people. But our executive committee is a group of 16 people to whom I report, and they make the tough decisions as they are elected from the board of directors. But we've got some very tough things we've got to study about this beautiful building, about our Voice magazine, which is not a profit center for us by any means. It's really not supposed to be a profit center. It's a perk to our members, but it's reached the point now that that perk is costing us a lot of money. And as so many other things are going to the digital world, is it time for that to go to the digital world? We don't know. We're studying that. There's nothing that's safe in terms of our looking and investigating. Everything is on the table, and that's the obligation of a group that runs an organization to constantly review everything that you're doing and try to do it more effectively and do it so that your member services are held to the highest accountable point.
Well, it sounds like the association is here to stay. And although things are tough, there are changes that have been made, and certainly times do change. Most businesses have found that they don't need as large a staff to function as they did because of technology, and so I'm sure that that probably comes into play somewhat. Technology and communication has changed so much that we're actually able to have this show today that we couldn't have done 5 years ago. And the perception of people is influenced greatly by technology. Facebook is here. Pinterest is here. LinkedIn is here. Twitter is here. So things that happen in the horse world or in any other walk of life, politically or anything else, is immediately reported on. And so some of the reports of the demise of the association probably are a little premature and fueled by some of the comments that we see through social media today. I know that there's a large opportunity for us to expand the Walking Horse, both here in this country and internationally. And I know that there's some programs that are going on, ongoing. So we have programs that are pretty strong in Europe. We just finished, some German championships, I think?
Yes, sir, that is correct. I think the European championships were actually, I think that there is a German championship. We have a European championship coming up. We participate heavily in Equitana, which is probably the world's largest equine trade show in Essen, Germany, and we've been a part of that for a number of years. I began as an employee here in 1997, and at that time there had begun the push for to market the breed internationally, and one of the places that we began was Germany, and that's where we've seen probably the most growth. The Netherlands has also been successful for us. We've done some good things in Israel, you know, we talk about all of these negative things, Gary, and you know, it's sort of somebody used the term perfect storm with the economy and the increased scrutiny with the humane groups and things that we have to endure, and the regulatory things from USDA that our breed endures that others don't. So it's, you know, as Ron said, other breeds are struggling as well. We have kind of got a double hit with the regulatory things. But what gets lost in all of that, to me, which is sad, is the breed is still such a tremendously great breed. The versatility, the temperament, I mean, it's still the same flat walk, running walk canter that was established in 1935, the smooth riding gait. And you know, that's what we have to look for, and that's what we have to continue to promote the breed as it was intended to be bred and promoted, as a smooth riding companion trail mount for a variety of people, young and old. And we have a variety of programs that do that, endurance programs. We have a program called a Go Gelding, where we actually reward geldings, other than just the stallions and the mares that seem to get a lot of the credit. We introduced an international high point program last year. We have a new program called Micah Care that was named after a youth member who died unfortunately of an illness, there's just a lot of programs here that people can, competitive trail riding. I mean, this is the best trail riding horse in the world, in my opinion. And those are the things that get lost in all of the negative things, is how great the horse is on its own.
Well, and it is a great breed, and one of the things that we'll do with EL Radio going forward is talk about the different disciplines that that the walking horse is involved in today, and some areas that people hadn't considered for the walking horse. I know that in just a couple of weeks we'll have the Extreme Cowboy National Championships that will be held at Celebration Grounds, and in a couple of weeks Tracy Pinson is going to be joining us to talk about her involvement in that with her walking horse. Hopefully we'll have Craig Cameron on the show to talk with us. But we'll be exploring all the venues that and the disciplines that the walking horse is used in and can be used in to help expand the breed. So people really are not aware of the different things that the walking horse is involved in as far as its versatility, and hopefully we'll continue to share that with folks. And I know that the Breeders Association has done a lot, and I think really the only association in the horse industry, for the walking horse industry, that promotes the walking horse both internationally and for the different disciplines that he's involved in. What is the biggest drawback, the biggest hurdle that we have as a horse breed to overcome to help expand and grow the market for the walking horse today?
Gary, I think that our number one hurdle today, and maybe the good thing, is just to meet it head on and acknowledge the elephant in the room and then try to fix it as we move forward, is the welfare of the animal and the allegations of abuse and so forth that have really been focused on our breed recently. Animal welfare right now is extremely critical to us. I think it's critical to every organization in this industry, and they are all trying to deal with it in their own way and do it as best they possibly can. And today that seems to be the only real negative, the only thing that's keeping this animal from being more universally accepted. And I'm reminded, Gary, of something like the American Kennel Club, for example. In that big organization, there are many breeds of dogs. And there are the Shih Tzus and the Poodles, the little lap dogs. And then there are the Rottweilers and the Pit Bulls and the German Shepherds and the Great Danes. All different breeds of dogs come under that umbrella. And it's American Kennel Club's responsibility to take care and to acknowledge all disciplines, because people have the right to choose what they want to choose. Our industry is no different. There is a number of our people that prefer the padded horse with an action device that's exciting to them going around the ring, and they love that animal. And as long as that animal is not abused in any way, I think we all should throw our shoulder to the wheel, support it, and continue to keep it going. Now, there are many, many people outside the breed that don't share that thought, and that is certainly their right. But the action device and the pads that our horses wear, if properly used, do nothing more than accentuate the gait. I like putting a bigger carburetor on an engine. It'll go faster with a bigger carburetor. This horse will be more animated and more exciting in the show ring with action devices and pads. Now, there is currently legislation proposed by Representative Ed Whitfield in Kentucky to eliminate all pads and action devices. We do not know where that legislation will end, and neither does anyone. It will take its proper course through our government and end up where it ends up. But there are many people that feel the way Representative Whitfield does, and then there are many that feel just the opposite. And we at the Breed Registry, without question, believe that both are appropriate if the horse is not harmed in any way.
The status of the Whitfield build currently is what, Ron?
It is, I think it's on its way out of committee, and if it succeeds there, it will end up on the House floor. Will it pass there? I don't know. I mean, there's some that say it's got a very low percentage chance of passing. Some say it has a high percent chance of passing. We just don't know where. I don't know where that is. I'm sure there's some political people in our industry that know a lot more than I do. I just know that there's a misconception that people think you can vote for part of the bill and not vote for the rest of the bill, and that is totally wrong. The bill has been presented, and you vote as presented, not the way you wish it were, but the way it is today. It's an up and down, yes or no vote, should this pass. And that's where our industry, I think, is going to be at peril, because we're going to be looking at continuing with the action devices and the pads we presently have, or having none. And that's a huge swing if our industry ends up without the right to use action devices or pads in the show ring.
Well, it certainly will change things for the horse here in the southeastern part of the country. You know, as we were talking about this, I'm a fan of Dr. Bob Womack, and I've recently reread his book, The Echo of Hoofbeats, and I found a passage in here, and it was a quote from Dr. Dave Whitaker of MTSU, and his statement was that the people of Europe and the United States have gradually moved to a position of stronger human and animal rights. The conviction of these people will, in the end, have a much stronger impact on determining the future of the walking horse than any DQP or court conviction for soaring. Now, the interesting thing about this is that this was written 30 years ago, and it's probably truer today than it was 30 years ago, again, in part because of social media and the technology that we have today. So that is a huge issue that we have for the industry. I know that when we talk to people, and they're passionate on both sides about of this subject, of how we take care of our horses and the perception of the use of pads and chains for the performance padded horse.
Gary, there are some people that just will not accept the padded horse and its action device, and that is their right to choose that. I just wish some of them would not be critical of it as long as the horse is not being abused. Recently, a person told me that they wish we would use our horses the way the thoroughbreds do, that they're born to run, and that on the surface is true, but I quickly tell them they're not born to run a mile in 2 minutes. They're trained to run a mile in 2 minutes, and not many of them can. And our horse is a horse that is beautiful in its own right in its flat shod arena. The animation is less, but the gait is true, and it is very enjoyable as the horse moves up through the ranks and on into the padded division for those who prefer that. It, to them, of course, is an extremely exciting horse and an exciting event when they go to one of those shows. It's all in the mind of the person who is looking at it. And how I do wish that the emphasis could be on improving the quality of life of this horse and us treating this horse with more respect, more so than just what the equipment is. As long as equipment doesn't harm the horse, that should not even be a factor. The factor should be on the welfare of the animal. Recently I learned something that was very poignant to me, that 5 or 6 years ago in the pig world, that HSUS and PETA and some other groups said that these individual crates, breeding and foaling crates for pigs, was not proper, that the sows were in there by themselves, that was inhumane, and they wanted that changed. And the majority of the people in the pig industry told them, no, it's better for the sow. They don't fight each other, they don't bite each other, the piglets are bigger when they come, they don't get stepped on and killed. Well, finally, the industry lost, and they had to remove these crates that they were put into once they're bred, stalls or crates. And the moral of that little story is that equine officials, veterinarians and so forth, I'm sorry, the veterinarians for that breed of pigs, said that these crates they were in during their time of gestation was better for them, and that's the way they should be left. They had science on their side, but the public won. So the science and veterinary medicine said it's better for our pigs to do it this way, but the people said, no, we think that's horrible to put a pig in there that way. We want them all together, even though that was not as good for the pig long term. Overall, public still won. So many times you can have science on your side and you can still lose when it comes to public perception. Thank you.
Well, perception is really really what drives people. And again, people are passionate about horses, passionate about animals. And if you get in a discussion about religion, politics, our children, or our horses, I think that brings the greatest amount of disagreement and sometimes violent arguments. One of the other things, and I want to address this while we're on the phone, and this came to my attention again today. Wayne Purcell, who is the president of the Humane Society, is in Nashville at the Gaylord Opryland Hotel. And he was on one of the local Nashville channels today, and I think is doing a press conference today. And the press conference is to try to encourage the state to investigate the walking horse industry, or at least that's what we've been told. Currently, there's a bill that's on Governor Haslam's desk that is the, I think it's called the Livestock Cruelty Protection Act, and that's received a lot of activity, a lot of national attention, and the outcome on that bill is not to be determined yet, but I'm saying that to say this. People have stated, where are our industry leaders? Where is our news conference? And we have PSHA, and we have SHOW, and we have FAST, and throughout the years, and I've been involved in this business for over half a century. That's a long time when you say it like that. But there's been a tremendous amount of disunity through all of these years. And I'm going to quote again from Dr. Womack's book, and I think this was a Dr. F.L. Rogers that made this statement. And he said, there are two vital keys to the ultimate success of the Tennessee walking horse. We have to overcome the disgrace that has plagued and hobbled this beautiful animal for over a quarter of a century. Now, that was 30 years ago, so that's been over 55 years. And we have to overcome the disunity that has plagued the industry for nearly twice as long. The industry's failure will be expressive of how well the personal lust for power monetary gain and prestige are controlled, and how wisely reasonable, considerate, and dedicated leaders are able to weld it all together. It doesn't seem that we've been able to do that through all these decades. And in addition to dealing with the image that we have for the performance horse, it would seem that disunity or a lack of unity in the industry is a major problem. Where would Tweeba fit into this picture?
Gary, it sounds like Dr. Rogers was a very wise man. He hit it pretty straight right on the head 30 years ago. Back to what was discussed earlier, the very nature of our industry, the way it was organized and the way it has continued to evolve, allows for the appearance of disunity and fussing and not having one voice, which we do not have. As to the breeders, we regularly hear people say, well, the breed registry needs to be where everything is handled. Well, go tell the other three groups that. They just go turn over their staff and telephone numbers to us. It just doesn't work that way. And I think right now all of the organizations in our industry are saying the right thing, that we've got to protect this horse and treat this horse with more dignity. And if we do that, the remainder of the problems will very quickly go away. But we've got to do that, and we've got to be serious about doing that. And while we're on that subject, may I mention something that's causing us some real heartache right now, is we have 8,300 members, and we don't have a good breakdown of how many are flat shot, how many are padded, how many are this, how many are that. But without a doubt, the heavy, heavy majority of them are just people that own flat-shod Tennessee walking horses, trail ride them, have them in the backyard, feed them carrots on Saturday. That's by far the heavy majority. And many of these people are telling us, you, meaning the breeders, need to quit recognizing and rewarding anyone with a Horse Protection Act violation. Don't give them any credit. Don't put their name on the wall. Don't let them be nominated for this. Don't let them serve on the board or the executive committee. And that's tough love. It makes sense when they say it to you, and publicly it's really hard to talk against it when they said, how would you want someone that's on your board that's had X number of horse protection violations? It's hard to defend that, Gary. We even have some go so far as to say you shouldn't recognize champions from the World Championship show in Shelbyville, because they were crowned under a non-compliant horse industry organization that hadn't accepted the mandatory penalties which were designed to protect the horse and increase its quality of life. Those are tough things to deal with. And our 16-member executive committee is having to deal with some of them right now because they're not going away. They're going to stay there until they're handled one way or the other. And it makes for some tough meetings.
Well, sometimes it's hard to do the right thing. And I know that we all have friends in this business, and we have friends that are on one side of the discussion and the other. But can you see a time where the association might step up and be the unifying body? Because it seems like there are people today that would like to have someone that represents, and the term has been used, stakeholder. A lot of times that's used for people that are in the performance padded industry, but we're all stakeholders in this thing, whether you have a trail horse or a versatility horse or whatever your discipline is. We're all stakeholders in what this is. Can you see the association at some point in time being able to bring people together and speak as that one voice for the industry?
Gary, I hope so. And I think that all we can do as associations lead by example. And our two primary objectives are to protect the Tennessee Walking Horse in its best interest and protect this association in its best interest. And as Ron stated, there are a couple of very controversial items that are coming down the pike with the Whitfield Amendment, with the with what Ron talked about, with no longer recognizing individuals who get violations in any capacity on our board or through awards to the association. And the executive committee, the 16 people on the executive committee, are going to be faced with those very soon. We have a semi-annual board of directors meeting the end of this month where our 70-plus board members from all over the United States and different parts of the world will be coming to Lewisburg, Tennessee. And my goal as president is to get our 16 executive committee members to come out strongly on these important issues and have a plan going forward that is in the best interest of the Tennessee Walking Horse and the best interest of the Breeders Association, because ultimately that's all that we're charged with doing. And I think if we say the right things and we not just give it lip service, we've got to make some tough decisions, tough love, as Ron said. And I think that this association and our executive committee is on the verge of coming out stronger than it has ever come out, and in support of some of these tough measures that ultimately aren't going away, as he said, and we have to face.
Well, I think that I think some of the humane groups are smelling blood right now.
Well, and that's the thing too, Gary. You know, we recognize that it's not going away, that this is a smaller world through technology than it's ever been, and all of these things are on the front page every day, and we're being watched very closely. And the measure of leadership is how do you respond when things are tough. And I feel strongly, and I'm very hopeful that the Walking Horse Breeders Association is going to do the right thing for the Tennessee Walking Horse and its welfare.
Let me mention this. I announced earlier in the program that this would be the only show that we have where we don't take calls. And I know we've had some people that have been holding to join the conversation. So I want to apologize and let you know that I've offered an invitation to both Ron and Tracy to come back after the board meeting later this month. And at that time, open the phone lines up to take questions and answer your concerns. So if you're holding right now, I don't want you to just have to stay on the line. We'll not be taking calls today. But every show beginning next Thursday, we'll be taking live calls. So I apologize for that. But again, I'm an old guy, and technology is not friendly to me. So we'll address that later. Tracy, how can people have a voice with the association? I mean, I know that I've been a member for over 20 years. My dad was a member 30 years before that. A lot of folks don't become engaged and involved with the association, and they question about representation. But I know that when I get a ballot to vote, I send that in. And when directors are nominated from Tennessee, I vote for folks. And if a survey is sent out, I respond to it. But I know that's not been the case. There's quite a bit of complacency, it seems. How can we encourage people to get involved with the association, to let their thoughts be known, so that we can move in a direction that folks would like to move?
Well, I think it's important that people join and participate, and they're encouraged to do that. We have 15 or 16 operating divisions on our executive committee, representing animal welfare, representing pleasure horse, representing performance horse, representing marketing, bylaws, youth, horse shows, and there are a number of ways to get involved as just a member. You don't have to be on the board to serve on a committee, and we would encourage members to serve and volunteer for those committees. You know, we recently, one of our executive committee members, Jason Bacher from Missouri, he sent out an email to lapsed members, encouraging them to rejoin, asking them to rejoin, and asking the question, why are you not renewing your membership? And we got an earful We really did. And between Jason and myself and another executive committee member, Caroline Hoffman, also from Missouri, we tried to answer every one of those people. And we're listening. I want people to know that we do hear you. And it's important to know the reasons, and that's why we asked it. And I just encourage people to join, get involved with committees, get involved with horse shows, local horse shows, trail rides, any way you can participate with this horse to better its welfare in the future. We would encourage them.
Well, and I would second that. I think that, you know, if you're not going to be involved in your association, and this is the association, the registry for the Tennessee Walking Horse, with the exception of WOA and the Trainers Association, it's the only member-driven national association to represent the horse, and we are the breed registry. So if you don't get involved in the association, I would suggest you not complain about things that aren't getting done. So get involved, become a member of the association, communicate with the folks there. It's our association, and it's not a them, it's not a they. The association is made up of membership. So let's talk about some pleasant things for the last few minutes that we have on the show today. And what have we got coming up that TWEBA is sponsoring? I know that we have a World Versatility Show that comes up in July, and when is that?
That is July 25th through 27th. And last year we had 652 entries. We're hoping for an increase this year. It will be in Murfreesboro, Miller Coliseum. And that is an exciting, cram full 3 days of showing Tennessee walking horses and enjoying them. And then tying in right behind that on Sunday night will be our annual Futurity. That event is for the youngsters of the breed, and Futurity nominations, since the number of mares being bred is down, certainly our nominations for the Futurity are down, but that doesn't mean that it won't be an exciting show. We're optimistic about that. And, Gary, if you would allow me in these last few minutes just to mention a couple of other things, if that's okay.
Yes, sir. Go right ahead.
Many people don't understand our efforts in Germany and Poland and throughout Europe, why are we over there, and China. We've been to China twice. We go there with federal dollars, USLGE money. It's money that the government sets aside. You ask for approval. They grant it to a certain level that they approve, and you're allowed to spend that amount, but only out of the country to improve exports of equine. So that is when people ask us, well, we've got so many problems at home, why are you in Germany? Well, it's because we're spending the government's money to promote our horse over there. Another thing I want to mention is we are trying to get legs under a new program that has just been a tough thing to do, not because people aren't interested in it. We just are having trouble getting all of the dots connected, and it's called a service horse program. That's a program where we recognize Tennessee walking horses that are used for search and rescue, crowd control, primarily by police departments, although volunteer rescue units also come under this program. This program, once it's up and running, Gary, in its final form, will be a program whereby, say, the program chief from, say, Baton Rouge, Louisiana, can get on our website once a week and enter the number of hours that each of his men or women spent in the saddle on crowd control or search and rescue. They can do the same thing for the amount of time horses have logged in those areas. And then there will be a wonderful a camaraderie of people. Someone in Louisville, Kentucky, on the horse-mounted program saying, we need a gelding to be added to our program. And they start searching, and they find one in Sarasota, Florida, that's had 2,100 hours of work. It's a 9-year-old gelding. Looks like it would fit their program. And then they call and ask about that. We are optimistic once it's in its final form that it will be something with a very, very nice year-end program where we'll recognize the men and women who've done the most for their communities through equine work, and even such things as the most, maybe not the most daring rescue, but the most unusual, or where you find a little blonde girl that's been lost in the woods and bring her out on the front of a Tennessee walking horse with a man or a woman, police officer holding her. We think that's going to have some real merit. There's not one clearinghouse in America right now for that. Once it's up and going, any breed of horse can participate, but you have to be a member of the breeders to log in on our computer and use your number to get into the various services. As mares are not bred, and the breeding sheds are not as busy, that's the one thing that really hurts our revenue stream. And that also hurts our membership. If people aren't breeding mares, their need to be a member of the breeders is diminished. And there has been an 82% reduction in the mares going to the breeding sheds in the last 10 years. That's a terrible number. But that number is not really unlike most other breeds. It may be a little bit higher, but not much higher than other breeds. They've all experienced this in this recession and the lack of dollars to spend on hobbies and other areas of interest. I just wanted to mention those few things.
Well, and I understand that I was, at one time I had 20 some odd brood mares myself, and I'm down to zero and haven't raised any colts in the last several years because of the market, but I miss that, and may be tempted to breed the one mare that I have left this year. I know in addition to the programs that you just mentioned, Ron, we also have programs for trail riders, and you can log your hours in as a trail rider, and we have some nice awards that are given through the association for that. We have, as Tracy mentioned, the Go Gilding and the Motivated Mare program, and that's a great program that has some payback for folks that participate in that, so we'd encourage people to check out the website, and that's twiba.com, T-W-H-B-E-A.com, to look at the programs that are available. So whether it's endurance riding or trail riding or competitive riding of other types, you know, we have a horse that can do all of those different things. And I just noticed the other day that we have a $2,500 pot for the reining horses. Tracy, have you ever participated in that? Are you tempted?
No, I haven't. I admire people who do, though, and that is tremendous. It takes a tremendous amount of training, but I do admire watching it and the people that are good at it.
Well, I know there are a lot of different programs that are involved in the versatility, and dressage is one of those. There's a new program that's cowboy dressage. And I hope that we'll have somebody on the program to talk about that before too long. That seems to be something that's sweeping the country. And we have a lot of participation in the versatility program. So 650 entries last year was a great number, and hopefully we'll see that number grow.
The good thing about that entire thing, Gary, to me, is when you go to our World Versatility Show, coupled with our National Futurity, you get to see the Tennessee Walking Horse perform in so many disciplines, from a weanling to a three-year-old year, padded, flat shod, reining, dressage. We talk about this breed being versatile. If you want to see it in its ultimate versatility, right there is the place to see it, all in one venue.
Well, I plan on being there this year, and again, those dates are July what?
I've got them right here in front of me, my friend, and they are on July the 25th through the 28th.
And that will be at the Miller Coliseum in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. So we want to encourage people to show up for that and participate. And I think also that there's booth space available if people have horse-related items or how does that work?
Gary, they call our office and speak with one of our staff members, and we do not charge for them to be there, but MTSU charges a $25 fee for them to be there for 4 days, and they are welcome if it's a breed publication or if it's someone selling jewelry or horse-related attire. We would be delighted to have them.
And what is that number they can call, Ron?
It is 931-359-1574.
Okay. So remember that phone number. Remember the TWEBA website, the TWEBA website, and that's twhba.com. And get involved in the association. I want to thank Ron and Tracy both for spending this time with us today and talking about the association and some of the things that are going on in the horse world. It's difficult sometimes to talk about the elephant in the room and some of the challenges that we face, but we've got a great horse, and I just appreciate both of you spending the time with us today. And again, I invite you to come back and be a guest on the show, and we'll open up the phone lines hopefully after the semi-annual board meeting later this month. So, Ron, Tracy, thank you so much. I appreciate you being with us.
Gary, thank you for having us. And to any of your listeners that have questions that were on hold thinking they were going to get to call in today, you tell them to call our office here. We'd be delighted to talk to them and answer their questions.
Well, thank you so much, Ron. And thank you, Tracy.
Thank you. I appreciate it very much. It was my pleasure.
Okay. Let me remind you that our show is on at noon every Thursday, and we'll have some very interesting guests. We'll have our phone lines will be open for all of the remainder of our calls, and I'll try to deal with that technology, and I think that we'll have that down as we go. If you have any comments that you would like to make about the show today, you can go to our website, and that's www.equestrianlegacy.net, and leave your comments, and we'll share those as well. And if you have topics that you'd like to discuss on the show, or if you have guests that you would like to see on the show, please let us know about that. We'll be looking forward to talking with some of the other industry leaders, and we want to talk with you. So be sure to tune in every Thursday for Equestrian Legacy Radio. Thanks for listening.